Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies feline with a death wish. E-Right didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we guessed it.
We'll start hour two with the Rockets. They lose to Sacramento last night. Been a rough go of it on this road trip. I mean, they play two in Portland and lose, and then they follow that up with an awful night in Sacramento. This comes from the well-researched account called Brick Center, so certainly something we can trust. The Rockets have the worst three-point percentage over five games in NBA history. They're currently shooting over that five-game stretch 23.4% from the field. So, if we trust Brick Center, and maybe we just trust our own eyes.
It feels, A, it feels true. B, if anyone has the stat ready to go.
It should be Brick Center, right?
Brick Center should be the one to trust on this.
Yeah, some other numbers. Kevin Durant, he's played the fourth most minutes per game in the NBA this year. He's behind Tyrese Maxey, Amen Thompson, Luka, and Kevin Durant. What do the first three have in common, Sean?
They're 10 years younger than
None of them are 37 years old. Yes, you're correct. You are correct. None of them are 37. I mean, Amen's pre-prime, maybe even Tyrese Maxey is pre-prime. As far as generally when we think of their age, yes, he's playing great in his prime as a performance-wise, but pre-prime as far as age, and Luka's right in his prime. Maybe even Luka, if we just go by traditionally, pre-prime as well. But
or if you're Nico Harrison.
Well, we saw what happened to Nico. He's post his prime, too, with the Mavericks at least. So you've got a guy whose durability was questioned coming into the year, and they're loading him up with minutes. And why are they doing that? Well, let's listen to Ime, considering his thoughts on the Rockets and how they performed in Portland without Kevin Durant on the floor.
You take a 37-year-old out of the game for 2 minutes, and you lose a 13-point lead, 11-0 run. That's what went wrong. Don't play with any aggression, confidence, mentally weak, and have a 15-point quarter, 1 for 17 from three. I think a bunch of wide open looks. Making shots help, but you have to guard on one end. You have to play with some aggression on one end, drive it physically, take care of the ball and not turn it over. So all of the above, but the fact that we have to rely on a 37-year-old for 40-plus minutes is a problem.
Over the last two games, combined, the Rockets have been outscored by 30 points in the fourth quarter. Against Portland, they got outscored 35-14. That's a total of 19 points. They had a big lead, lost that game by six. And then, of course, last night, they got outscored 33-22. So they weren't leading, but they were in the game. And Sacramento put them away. If you can't shoot, that's a giant problem. So obviously you don't make shots, you don't win games, but I think, and you listen to the coach talk about it, the underlying problem for him is they're not playing with the level of intensity and aggression that he demands, and he thinks that's why they're losing games. Because if you're defensive minded, at least that's what they are positioned to be. Certainly, under Ime, that's what he would want them to be. You give up 33 points in the fourth quarter to the Kings, and the night before you give up 34 to the Blazers. He's going to tell you, we can shoot as poorly as we want. If we get stops, we got a shot to win the game. Now, I would agree with him for Portland because, yes, you scored 15 points, but your lead was big enough that that's an awful showing.
Yeah.
If you get stops, you're probably at least in the game and maybe you win it. It would be overcoming an awful fourth quarter, but they lost that. They got outscored by 19. 34 points.
They lost
points
by two.
They lost by six in that
six.
One.
Oh, wait, which one?
Previous game, I think they lost by one before, or two, yeah. So you get outscored 34-15 in a quarter where the Blazers, in a game where the Blazers hadn't broken 30 in a quarter, that's going to bother them because you think entering that quarter, if you get stops, that means transition offense. That means maybe easier buckets. So it all kind of ties in, but they didn't get enough stops. They lose that game. Last night, that's a tight ball game that you are trailing in, but he would probably tell you 33 points is way too many points to give up.
And second game against the Sacramento Kings, one of the worst rebounding teams in the league where they out-rebound you, is not great.
Yeah.
Not great. The same thing happened in their game in December that the Rockets blew in overtime or blew in regulation and then lost in overtime. Can't be doing that. Can't be doing that either. Now, I do kind of think that it is simple to say, hey, don't have the worst three-point shooting five-game stretch of NBA history, and you will probably win one or two of these games.
Possibly.
You know, like there are some – they're all single-digit losses, except for the Kings one. But I think that obvious every time the Rockets lose. Ime Udoka, what do you think went wrong? I don't think we played hard enough.
We got punked. We're soft. It's stuff just, like that. Yeah,
that's just what how he views the game. Like that's the prism in which he's viewing.
And I think
this
it upset some people. They think the offense is kind of stagnant when Kevin Durant's not making shots, The public-facing solution is always we got to play harder. We got to be more aggressive. And people are like, what about getting better looks?
What about Jabari Smith? Just all of it.
Well,
he's gotten some great looks.
He's part of the reason why they're one of the worst three. Well, apparently, according to Brick Center, the worst three-pointing shooting team over a five-game stretch ever. Jabari Smith has been bad. You look at some of the numbers when it comes to when they lose ball games. I don't want to go, it's Jabari's fault. Just because his numbers are bad, but we joked about tour dates last year.
Whew.
He
it's spring.
And there, by the way, there this
it's early spring.
This comes from an account called at NBA Tour Dates,
expert in the field.
So much like Brick Center, Jabari Smith in losses this season for the Rockets: 4-13, 6-21, 2-13, 2-13, 6-16. So Jabari, we'll see if he goes on a year-long tour. But 5-18, 7-20, 3-14, 3-9, 2-6. I'm not going to count. It's 2-6. He didn't get enough shots. It's still a tour date.
Yeah.
But he didn't get enough shots for it to really be
like
that impactful.
Just like how if you go like 11-20, like that's not really a tour
date. Yeah, I mean, he actually had a pretty good night.
Yeah.
So he has struggled immensely, and his people were talking about he's going to, or at least he talked about he was going to, watch Kevin Durant film, study and learn. You can study all you want. It's pretty hard to be Kevin Durant. But even still, you'd like Jabari to be shooting better.
Yeah. Can I have you be Trevor Ariza? Like, can I have you not go 0 for 10 on Friday night?
You're providing some. If Corey Brewer.
Actually, Trevor Ariza had famously bad example for that.
If Corey Brewer had the confidence to shoot more, this is what Corey Brewer was providing at times for the Rockets.
Greener light.
If he had a greener light, this is what Corey Brewer would have been providing. So. Those are ugly numbers, certainly for Jabari. He has not had a great year. And the Rockets overall, against the worst teams in basketball, at least in the West, have not been great. The numbers are disappointing. These are the teams you beat up on to go win 55 games or so because you're just that much better. This is from Bredeau, NBA. He's a guy who covers the Rockets. They've lost to the Kings twice, who currently are the 15th seed at 9-30. Lost to the Pelicans, 14 seed. Lost to the Jazz, 13 seed. Lost to the Mavs, 12 seed twice. Lost to the Clippers, 11 seed. Lost to the Blazers twice, who are 9 seed. So the Blazers are the less embarrassing one of the, unless you just really hate Denny Avia, which apparently a lot of Rocket fans do. I did not know that until this last couple games. So 9 of their 14 losses are against the worst teams in the Western Conference. The Texans at a point were like, they beat up on minnows, and certainly that is, and that has changed. They've played better teams, you know, Chargers, Bills. They beat those teams. The Patriots would be a team who flourishes beating up on bad teams. That's what their resume says. Now they did obviously won a playoff game yesterday. You know what? It's much better, even if you're playing bad teams, to beat them. I prefer the Rockets to be known as, oh, they just slap around minnows, because there are a lot of minnows to slap around, and they're not doing it. And that's why, what are they, 22-14 now?
Yep.
Which is a record that people wouldn't have suspected coming into the year. And I guess the chef's kiss, 36 games in, is that the Suns have a better record.
Who won the trade?
The Rockets. But
yeah, because that's the thing. The best player is still Kevin, or actually, the best player over the stretch has been Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
For the season, it's been Alperen Şengün. But it's like, no, but it's really, I mean, it's the fact that you, even if you're not the worst shooting team in NBA history, your percentages the last three games are all like in the low 20s.
Yes, it's
like
been bad.
23, 22. Like that's where I have a hard time just being like,
it's not sustainable how bad
they've
been.
Yeah, there's systemic issues. I'm like, just like, you know, when Jalen Green, I think by last year, I had it covered, where it's like, when Jalen Green has a great night, just look at how he shot from three. And yep, chances are he shot 70% from three, and that is just not sustainable. And this is the flip side of it on a team scale. Is
they are not going to be this bad.
Yeah, and while like you can look, you know, their effort last night wasn't good, but you have a decent shooting game. Now you're way in this game, and you know, obviously it's not just like as simple as just add up, you know, miss threes, turn them into makes, and that's the score. Because you know, you play the game differently depending on the score. So like, like you're just in that game if you just play a little bit better on wide open threes. That's really all you need to do. But it is a bad stretch for the Rockets. Good teams have bad stretches over the course of an 82 game season. I will say the upside is, like, while there are things where it's like Udoka brought up, where you take out Kevin Durant, you lose a 13-point lead. Like, that's a problem. Don't be doing that. That's why he has to play 40 minutes, is that when you take him out, just the offense falls off a cliff, especially without Şengün out there. When Şengün's there, you can stagger him a little bit more. It's less of a problem. But beyond that, and the fact that Jabari Smith is, I don't know what's going on with him, there's not a lot of long-term, like, oh my God, this is a problem for the Rockets in these last three games. It is just like, you better get over this very fast.
And some of it gets highlighted because he just got a deal. Like, when that happens, people are expecting a better performance. He has not been great this year.
When you throw an 0-for-10 from three, like, that catches people's eye.
Yeah, and he's been fine, but when you get the number that he got, even if it was considered team friendly, you expect a leap. And Jabari Smith this year is very similar to past Jabari Smith.
Yeah.
Like, he's taken more shots, like three more shots, so the numbers are up as far as scoring, but the percentages aren't up shooting the basketball in any way, shape, or form. And the rebounding, you know, all that stuff is kind of similar to what he has been. So
it's just bad timing with the run of embarrassing losses matched up perfectly with one of his worst slumps of his career. Where it's just, it becomes like a microcosm of what's wrong with the team. Is it's easy to point at one guy, where it's like, hey, this team is shooting terribly from three. It's all the non-Kevin Durants that are letting this team down, and it's the guy who's missing the most open three. It's like, he is the, you know, of the last three games, he is the microcosm of the problem.
I do think we're like a week and a half of struggles away if these continue from people regretting, man, it really was Dylan and Jalen were still here. Not reasonable people. Not people who foresee the team potentially winning a title. And Kevin Durant certainly being a more likely way to go about it than just sticking with Dylan and Jalen Green. But it's just the nature of
Jalen Green and Jabari. Could we have done that?
I think I've seen that, certainly. I've seen, why do they choose Dylan as
I'm
opposed
sure
to Jabari?
Money reasons, but
probably. Yeah, Jabari didn't have his deal yet.
Yeah.
Dylan Brooks was there to make the money work, and he has been someone Phoenix has loved being there. They don't beat the Rockets, which is something we can take from it. But they are.
They're too good.
Yeah, that's true.
They're ahead of the
Suns need to be worse. And then the Rockets might take care of them.
Yeah, no.
The Rockets would actually lose to them if the Suns were worse.
Rockets just need to get through this Bulls game somehow.
Yeah.
And then they get to host the Thunder, get to host the T-Wolves. Ugh, the Pelicans come to town. Then, thank God, San Antonio comes to town. in this next like week or so,
the Rockets are getting the thing we always say about football teams: play down to the competition. The Rockets love to play down their competition. Unfortunately, I would like more wins that feel like losses. We're just getting losses.
Yeah. I could really use a like. Man, that there's no way that Denny Avdija should shoot like 25 free throws across two games against you. But hey. At least you come out with a win, you know. Don't ask how many, and that's all. It's like no, they're losses.
Actually. Yeah, when
all that happened, and you still lost.
Yeah, it's like when Ole Miss barely beat Washington State this year. Yeah. Well, 24-21 at home, a win that feels like a loss, but you know what? It was a win. The Rockets are allowing Washington State to drive down the field and throw the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. You keep losing to these bad teams, particularly blowing leads in the fourth quarter, or at least games where you're in it in the fourth quarter and then get worked in that quarter. All right, we'll go to break. We'll get more into the NFL, stuff to get to, and also certainly the Texans as we get closer and closer to the final game of Wild Card Weekend, Texans versus Steelers. We got word on Davis Mills. If you missed it, Davis Mills did not travel with the team because of the birth of his child. We now know his status. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Sean and I here till noon. Join us.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
Sean, while we take this call from Phil, I want you to think about which quarterback this NFL weekend did the worst for their reputation. Think about them all, how these games played out. Who's coming out of the weekend the worst as far as where they ranked generally publicly?
Yeah, just the temperature.
Yeah,
the temperature
it doesn't
of the
have
room.
To be a real thing because yeah. Most of them are young guys who got all the next season and the rest yeah. of their careers to change any narrative that
Snapshot.
May develop. But, you know, coming off the weekend, we had some performances that improved people's stock, yeah. others that stayed level, others that took a real hit.
I'll meditate on that.
But let's get to Phil here first. What's up, Phil?
Hey, Del, Sean, how you doing this morning? Del, I'm glad to hear that your heart rate and blood pressure are back down to manageable levels after last week.
Appreciate it.
So I live in Pittsburgh, but I lived down in Houston for a long time, and I was in Houston when the Texans came into existence, so I'm a big Texans fan. And I heard this morning there was a guy named Jim Waxall who does a website up here called 24/7, and they do a little 15-minute interview with him on the NPR station I heard this morning. And I found it interesting that one of the keys that he pointed out for the Steelers was the long ball, which some callers highlighted earlier today. So I found that curious. I mean, I'm still worried about the running backs, especially out of the backfield catching passes. So I'm definitely going to be looking at that, looking for that tonight, and hoping the Texans can, you know, break those up when they try them. Another interesting thing that I thought was the interviewer Preston, you know, a couple times about whether the head coach would have gotten fired if Luke made that kick, or if they lose tonight. And Wexel said no to both times because of the fact that the Rooney's like the stability. So I think he's safe unless they have like a really crappy season and they don't make the playoffs. You know, he's Mike Tomlin is inevitable.
Thanos of the NFL. The ownership group and his consistency and I guess being mediocre if you're a Steeler fan who would like to win more playoff games, but simply not having losing seasons you know better than me. Your ownership group or the ownership group up there is one that's not looking to make changes. And if Mike Tomlin would have to give them big reasons for that to happen, and winning the division, making the playoffs, is not considered enough to do that. I guess they look across the league and ignore the improvement some teams have made when they hire coaches and look at some of the failures that have happened once you get rid of a guy. You know, they've been around so long that you think about who they've seen fired or seen other franchises part ways with guys. It happens less often now because guys just don't get 7-8 years. If making the playoffs isn't enough anymore generally. But there have been times when teams win 10 games and maybe don't make the playoffs, and that's not enough. And then they go hire a guy, and the other guy is worse. I always think about Marty Schottenheimer. Like, the Chargers got rid of him after winning, like, 13 games or something, yeah. But it wasn't enough, and they're still the Chargers. Not that Schottenheimer would be around today, but, I mean, the Chargers didn't get better when they got rid of Schottenheimer. No,
because that was, like, 06 range. Yeah, so that was, I think, when they went, like, 14-2 and lost in the first round to the Patriots.
And they were
the divisional.
And they said that we got to make a change.
Hired North Turner, right?
What a decision. So I get the Steelers saying, hey, we know at a minimum, first of all, our team won't embarrass us.
Yeah.
Well, we always will be competitive. And sure, that feels like not enough, but they love stability, and that's what Mike Tomlin provides. As far as the game tonight, I think the Texans do need to tackle well. Of course, don't miss tackles. But particularly how the Steelers like to play, getting the ball out quick, whether it be to gain well, or Jaylen Warren, and they need to bring guys down. Mostly because we don't want what should be a 3rd-and-6 turning into a 3rd-and-2 or a 3rd-and-1. You want to keep the Steelers in mid to long range, long down distances, because then your pass rush can go to work. Yes, Aaron Rodgers will get the ball out quick. He'll throw some back shoulders and all that stuff. Fine. But we don't want him operating in these 3rd-and-4 situations where your defense can't be as tricky as they'd like, because they have to contend with multiple different ways that the Steelers can pick up first down. So I think it'll be a big tackling game for the Texans, and big on their linebackers and guys in that safety nickel position, like Petrie, to get guys down. And Petrie, not real fearful of him missing tackles, but toe-to-toe and others and in coverage, Not a great feeling. And I think the Packers again because I'm thinking about Aaron Rodgers. I think the Steelers, if they're smart, clearly won't test the outside guys, but they will attack the middle of the field and try to get their running backs on our linebackers and see if that's a way to move the football. So I think short passes will be in play, and certainly Aaron Rodgers will test you on what you would call low percentage, but low risk. Throw the back shoulders. Throw fades, slot fades, stuff like that to get the ball out of his hands quickly and find the one-on-one matchups. I think the Texans will have to hold up, certainly, in one-on-one coverage down the field where those goal balls feel like low risk for the Steelers, yeah, but big reward.
And remember, especially with these deep shots that we're, you know, expecting from the Steelers, going to have DK Metcalf.
He is back. He did not hit anyone since the last time he tried to hit someone, so he's available to play. That's not great for us, but good for the Steelers, and we'll see.
Yeah, without DK Metcalf, I'd be like, this thing. I have some real trouble seeing how the Steelers can move the ball. With DK Metcalf, I still see trouble, but
they'll have options.
I can see in the Doctor Strange 6 million alternate timelines, I can see more than one.
One way they win this game.
I think also Doctor Strange, a little bit of a drama queen with that.
Yeah, come on. It's the end of the world, and what are you doing?
There has to be more than one. Like, are you kidding me?
No. This is the one.
And the one involved them losing at that moment.
That's what he said. This is the one.
There wasn't one where, like,
nope.
Star-Lord doesn't. Okay. All right.
Could they have won without Star-Lord being an idiot? According to Doctor Strange, he had to be that idiot.
Okay. All right. Hey. I didn't see the projections he did, but okay. I just have some troubles.
The man's name is Doctor Strange, for goodness sake. Of course.
Yeah,
and you're still questioning him.
He's a doctor for a reason. Because he went to medical school.
Yeah, not because
of the sorcery.
Yeah, that's a different. No. Yeah, he's not Doctor Strange. Or his name isn't because of the sorcery, and he's not a doctor because of the magical powers.
That's just he's Dr. just Steven or whatever Strange.
It is Steven Strange. We did get a while Phil didn't mention Thanos. I mean, he inevitable. I mean,
yeah,
you're talking to these two nerds. We're going to make the connection, and now we're on Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Sean down on Doctor Strange.
Definitely, even if he winds up coming back in whatever character Charlize Theron or Theron was playing comes in with them.
Yeah,
remember that thing? Remember he disappeared and she was waiting for him?
Yeah, I remember that. Never followed up on.
Yeah, much like this is because that movie wasn't successful. Much like what's his name?
Harry Styles.
Harry Styles in the Eternals. Oh, look at the Harry Styles. Yeah. Okay, bye Harry Styles. Also, R.I.P. to the Blade movie. Feels like I saw that report.
Tough.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes lives on as our one and only Blade. Unless you watch the TV show. That was on Spike TV. Remember that network.
We don't count the TV fare for these. For any superheroes, we don't go like, who's your Superman? And someone brings up Smallville. I don't think that's a.
Certainly, we
I don't think that's valid.
Certainly a certain segment of our population decides to ignore Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
No adventures. Then you have the new Lois and Clark with Tyler. I forgot. I don't really know how to say his last name, but he's been around. He was on Teen Wolf at some point. We'll go to break with that, Sean. You'll have an answer to the question. Which quarterback
are you? Embarrassed himself. No, lost the most goodwill.
Or you just rank quarterbacks by how
vibe check.
The narratives and the vibe has changed around them. We'll
do
that.
I'll do vibe checks.
We'll do that when we come back. We got plenty of options from Trevor Lawrence to Justin Herbert. Those are what you might consider the negatives. And then you got Caleb Williams. Even Bryce Young. He led what we thought could have been a game-winning touchdown drive until Matthew Stafford got in his bag. Jalen Hurts. Won a Super Bowl, but what's it like for him today? Sean will give you the definitive vibe check on all these quarterbacks. Let's just hope CJ does enough where we don't have to question the future, and we'll get some answers on the Texans and CJ tonight. But as far as the vibe check, we'll get that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Del Olalea Show continues. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
Sean's going to give vibe check for all the quarterbacks that played over the weekend. Quarterback who visited Coral Gables but did not play, clearly, has made a decision. Sam Leavitt, former Arizona State quarterback, got the bag from LSU. Lane Kiffin showing up in Knoxville at the airport as Sam Leavitt was getting on a plane from Tennessee to go to Miami. Apparently worked. Or whatever he heard as far as money from Miami wasn't up to his liking. So Sam Leavitt, the former Arizona State quarterback, commits to play at LSU. We've got Dylan Raiola. He will go to Oregon, maybe following the Dante Moore track, where you sit a year despite starting someplace else if Dante Moore doesn't enter the draft, and then he's got a starting spot ready for him at Oregon. So those are the two couple big-name quarterbacks coming off the board in the last 2 hours or so as a portal season in full effect. And speaking of that, the Longhorns spending lots of cash. Cam Coleman, the Auburn receiver.
Cheez-It Bowl's champion.
That's right. And trying to be
today, or I got it on Friday.
Trying to be transfer portal champions as well. They get Cam Coleman. They get they got Relique Brown, the running back, and then they got Hollywood Smothers, one of the best names in college football, who initially committed to
Alabama,
and then Texas was like, excuse me, how much is it going to take for you to not go to Alabama? Hollywood Smothers gave them the number. They're like, that works.
Also, Alabama and Texas played a basketball game together that Cam Coleman was at. Texas somehow won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Miller, the ultimate closer.
That's what we're saying.
Sean Miller got football to recruit.
Don't give up on Sean Miller just yet, Texas fans. At least he's helping your football program.
I gave up on the roster. I haven't given up on the coach.
There it is. Just give him some time, I guess. So, Texas fully in. They're, in fact, calling it an all-in season for Sark.
Texas is back, folks!
We will see.
Let's get a couple O-linemen.
Would that be important, considering what we've seen in the playoffs this year?
Just one or two.
Where you might say
one or two more.
Yeah, let's add to the list.
They've got one. Give me a couple more.
Texas started off slow. People were wondering. Not so much anymore. Are they paying a tax? Like, all right. I mean,
she's a bull kit tax.
I don't know. Cam Coleman, big time receiver, did not get a chance to flourish because he was playing with Jackson Arnold at Auburn.
Yeah.
Now he decides, you know what? I want to play with Arch. It's going to cost you like $3.5 million, but I'll play with Arch or whatever the
number actually
is. I
saw that he someone was like, he only had like 60 yards per game, Cam Coleman, last year. I was like, run that through the conversion rate, though.
I'm talking 115,
normal, 120. Just a normal offense.
Yeah.
That's 95. Easy.
So he goes there. Texas never had a problem attracting receivers in the portal. I mean,
yeah, three of Steve Sarkisian's 5 years, five off seasons. Yeah. They've had number one transfer portal.
They go get their guys, and we'll see how it plays
Akeel
out.
Akeel Hall, though, was one of them. So
that's a miss.
Doesn't really count.
Former Alabama receiver.
And that was like 2021 portal.
Yeah, early on before you knew better. So there it is. I'm sure there'll be more portal names coming about. We'll talk about them. But as far as the quarterbacks are concerned, unless Ty Simpson is really being offered like $6.5 million to not enter the draft, which he has said he will do, that might be the last big name quarterback, as at least guys who've actually done anything. There's some five-star freshmen that are floating around who've never really played a meaningful down that'll go places. But guys we've seen throw meaningful passes, we're just about done. As I said, unless Ty Simpson gets out of the draft, and there are schools trying to convince him not to go to the NFL. That 6.5 number is nuts, but if you're desperate enough, maybe it gets Ty Simpson. Instead of leaving Alabama to go to the draft, he'll just leave Alabama to go join some team who thinks they have playoff aspirations.
He's this year's Quinn Ewers in this very specific way of he announced he's going to the draft, and college teams are like, are you sure? Because we would love to pay you $5 million to be our quarterback.
And Quinn was like, yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He did get to start a couple games, so maybe Quinn Ewers thinks it was a good decision. We'll see if Ty Simpson does as he has to contemplate his future. All right, Sean, talk some quarterbacks.
Yeah.
In the college, let's talk about the quarterbacks who played in the NFL this weekend. You have guys who needed this to establish themselves, others who needed it to change the narrative.
Do you want to go help the most to hurt the most, or hurt the most to help the most?
Let's go.
In the middle, it's not that interesting.
Let's go help the most to hurt the most.
So positive to negative.
Positive to negative, sure.
Number one, Caleb Williams.
I would agree. He was not going to catch so much crap because it was his first playoff start, but to bounce back from the ugly start to win the game in the way they did, that's a big time.
He gained a lot
change
in the
narrative.
Second half.
Yes, he did. Because he was going to go out sad, and then he went out. He's not even out, but he closed the game as a hero.
Yes. Number two, and this just, walk with me for a second. Although this might be evident. Bryce Young. I know he lost. Bryce Young, I think, gained the most.
I would think so.
Or second most.
The way he played late, he led a touchdown drive that could have been the winner, except he had the MVP on the other side. And the Panthers defensive coordinator decided to play as soft as humanly possible that entire drive. But Bryce Young, who we still got questions about, but in his first playoff start to play as well as he did late in the game.
And unlike all the other guys, he's kind of playing for his future.
I would agree.
He was playing for next year.
Yeah, you go 8-9, you don't play well, particularly well down the stretch. You get a home playoff game, you're going against Matt Stafford and that Rams team, and you play the way you did in the fourth quarter. That's going to buy you some time.
Number three, Josh Allen.
He had never won a road playoff game.
Never run a road playoff game. I think he gets, little legacy points for that. Also, no receivers. Their team's dropping like flies out there. Josh Allen. Drake May, just getting your first win. This is where it turns into like kind of boring, where it's just like minor bumps, minor demerits. Stafford, I had at five. Where it's like somewhat negative because of the third quarter, and then gains it back, probably back at neutral after the Saturday game, the Texans slot.
Sure, yeah, it was surprisingly considering it was the Panthers. You got a banger. Started the playoffs right.
Next one, I had Purdy. This is the power of winning.
Yeah, he threw some ugly balls.
Yes, he gained the least out of any winner. He maybe even lost some. If I think Stafford was at negative or as neutral, I think Purdy is like neutral, but like a little bit of side eye. Okay. A little bit of side eye of like. Well,
does the weather condition, do the wind
helps
play
a
part?
It helps a little. Okay. It helps a little, but those picks.
Oh, horrendous.
They weren't wind picks.
No,
they were
bad
terrible
decision
picks.
Yes, they were bad.
Jordan Love, 4 touchdown passes. It's not your fault, but when you author one of the bigger blown leads of recent memory,
it's different than the Herbert blown lead, because Herbert played a part missing throws in that second half against the Jags.
Yes.
This one, and Jordan Love, he did get the benefit of Ben Johnson's awful decision making, but he didn't get the benefit of, was it 4 picks that Trevor Lawrence threw?
Yes.
He got the benefit of 2 from Caleb Williams early.
Speaking of 4 pick Trevor Lawrence, 1 pick. No, 2 pick, I guess.
Yes.
2 pick Trevor Lawrence.
A batted ball. Maybe he threw that high. Parker Washington looked like he was coming open on that final play, so that doesn't help. If he missed Parker Washington coming across, of course, the Shaq Thompson first pick was awful.
Yeah.
But he, in that fourth quarter, up until that interception, I mean, of course, the interception counts, 2 touchdown drives, and he thought he had led a game-winning drive. Well, he probably didn't think because Josh Allen was on the other side, but at least at the time, he led a drive to take the lead relatively late in that game.
Yeah, yeah. This was more just like the opportunity lost more than straight
to
negative. Throwing 2 is pretty
bad. Tough. To beat Josh Allen.
His touchdown to interception ratio has got to be looking crazy in the playoffs.
How many?
Considering it through 4?
Yeah. I don't remember if he threw any against the Chiefs in their next game. But yeah, the numbers aren't great for him. Who else?
Okay, so we're at our bottom 2. And I first blush, I went with this. Now that I stare at it, I might have them flip. I had Herbert and then Hurts.
You think Herbert, because of circumstance, isn't as bad as Hurts?
Yes, gets a little bit more. Like the other side will be made for Herbert more. Where Hurts, people are ready to ding Hurts all season.
Where do you allow the Kevin Petullo factor to play as far as helping Hurts?
It helps that he has a fall guy. It definitely helps.
And Herbert has his own. Now they're blaming Greg Roman.
Yes, as is custom when
Herbert fails.
Your quarterback, or just any quarterback, loses or disappoints. It's always the OC's fault. It's always the OC's fault.
Of course.
Yeah, Herbert and Hurts, it's close. I think Hurts lost more, you know. He's starting from a higher spot in people's mind. He won the Super Bowl MVP 11 months ago, and now he kind of stinks up the joint, and no one really cares. Which I think does ding him a little bit. I think today Herbert catches it. I think over the course of the offseason, it's worse for Hurts.
The Eagles seem to have one of the more talented offensive rosters, or just all rosters, period, in football, not getting out of the first round.
But especially that offense.
You're playing a really injured 49er team who unfortunately lost George Kittle in the game. You had an opportunity late. If people weren't so disgusted by Petillo's play calling, Hurts would be catching it today.
Yeah.
But people have noted that the final drive of the game, they repeated play calls, they called a timeout, and then called 4 verts. People aren't overly impressed with Sirianni or Petullo. So Hurts will probably use them as a meat shield as far as people to blame. Of course, A.J. Brown dropped passes. Devontae Smith did. There's a lot of people pointing at the Eagles as a whole. I think the Eagles as a whole are catching it. Herbert, depending on how you felt about him going in, you can blame Roman, you can blame Harbaugh, you can blame the lack of tackles. But if you watch the film or just watch the game, there are opportunities to be made.
That's the thing.
Opportunities to take advantage of, and he did not take advantage of them.
I don't think Sunday night led to any conversions in the Justin Herbert.
I think people are steadfast depending on how they felt.
I don't think anyone flipped their opinion.
I would probably agree with that.
I think Hurts, like, people are more willing to be like, all right, we gave you good grace because, you know, 11 months ago you won the Super Bowl MVP. But, like, now it's an entire season of you win two games where you, like, don't complete a pass downfield.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is just who you are. And, like, it's almost to the point where it's, like, there's so much going wrong that I think there's credit, or I guess blame, to be spread out evenly. And when, you know, on first take in July, they need something to talk about. There will be the, like, are we sure Jalen Hurts is good kind of discussion.
Mere months after winning a Super Bowl. Well, a little bit longer than that now.
Yeah, a little bit cleanup on Trevor Lawrence. That Chargers game, he threw four touchdowns, four interceptions. The KC game that year, he threw 1-1. And then yesterday, he threw 3-2. So actually,
he comes out ahead by one.
Yeah, 8-7 touchdown to interception ratio.
Seven picks in three games, huh?
Not exactly, you know, Tom Brady stuff, but
no.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, seven picks in three games, pretty bad.
Not bad.
Two multi-interception games out of three, pretty bad.
Now let me
1-2 in playoff games, not great.
Let me sign into PFF and go to Justin Herbert.
Go look at his big time throw percentage. Yeah. All those things they
and
put
let
up there.
And compare him to Justin Herbert real quick.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to go to PFF. I think you can just go to. I think you can just go to Herbert's profile on ESPN and find the number of picks he's thrown. While you do that, we're going to go to break, and we'll have a really short segment when we come back. But before we go to break, I want to talk to you about Monument Chevrolet. In fact, I'm going to meet the guys from Monument in about 45 minutes or so. We'll talk to them about all the good things they've got going on. But before I meet them, I want to tell you about all the offers, particularly if you're looking for something durable or dependable like a Silverado, or maybe you're looking for something a little bit smaller. Maybe you're not a truck person, but you're looking for something that looks good, like the Trax. It's all there for you at the price you want at Monument Chevrolet. I'm going to, particularly after meeting with them, we're going to have some deals of the week. So we've done this before where a specific vehicle is the one you should focus on. If you're looking for a great deal, I'm going to let you know more about that as we move on throughout the week. So be on the lookout for the deal of the week and the car of the week in a little bit here. So where you can find all those deals is at monumentchevrolet.com. Check them out. Find out what you want on the website, and then head to Pasadena. They're off of Beltway 8 and 225. And whether it's a new car, a pre-owned car, or maybe you're a business owner looking for something for your fleet, or you're a new business owner and you're trying to start your fleet, Monument Chevrolet is the place for you. Get a great car with great people who've been in business a long time, over 50 years. You've been in business that long, you know you're doing it right, and the community is good with you. So MonumentChevrolet.com, head on out to Pasadena, Beltway, off of Beltway 8 and 225, find your great car. That's Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
It's the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
So Davis Mills will make the trip. He's flying into Pittsburgh today after staying back in Houston to be with his wife. They had another child, or I don't know if another child, but they had a child. So he was back in Houston. He was on the list, questionable to play in the game for personal reasons, but looks like he's going to be in Pittsburgh in time to be C.J. Stroud's backup as the Texans. Trying to get a win on the road for the first time in their history. So what are the conflicting things here? We've talked about the Monday Night Football streak that the Steelers have. Texans, no road wins in their playoff history. CJ, not great under 30 degrees, but maybe we, in fact, never won a game quarterbacking under 30 degrees in the NFL. But this one won't be under 30. It looks like it's going to be a little bit above 30 degrees.
Also, that one got debunked because the KC game earlier this year.
It was under 30 at the end? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there. Oh, yeah. It was like in the it was 27 throughout the game. So that one.
Also, he played at Ohio State. Like,
yeah.
He won plenty of games in the cold at Ohio State.
Just not against Michigan.
Mm-mm.
Not against Michigan. So, yeah, good to know that one's out of the way. Long winning streak teams have going to the playoffs. The Jags couldn't overcome recent history of that not going the team's way. The Texans will try to do that. And while they do play in a dome, and dome teams have not played well in the cold in the last decade, I think the number coming into today was 1-4, or at least coming into the weekend was 1-14. I don't know how cold it was in Carolina, so I don't know if that stat has been affected. But we know the Texans don't operate like a dome team. They play great defense, and they try to limit mistakes on offense. They're not some high-powered offense who needs great weather to succeed. And no matter how the game is, at least how it's played, we kind of expect this game to end somewhere around 21-17, 24-20, if we get crazy and another touchdown is scored. Is it a race to 20? I guess so. I don't know that any team is going to score more than 20. And if they do, it'll likely be because of non-offensive touchdown. I don't think it'll be as, I guess, boring or let's say as unattractive football-wise as Chargers and Pats. I think there's at least more offensive capability on both sides. You have Aaron Rodgers, you have DK Metcalf, and you have, of course, CJ Nico. What, 21-17? I expect the Texans to win, but you know, if we come here tomorrow and the Steelers have won this game, I think the margins are so small that you shouldn't be surprised. You should be disappointed. I asked a question. If they lost, would this be the most disappointing game in Texans history? If you say yes, if they lose, I probably would agree. So,
because they haven't ever lost as a favorite. Have they made?
No, because when they go on the road.
Maybe that one Colts home.
Yeah, I think maybe the Chiefs. Were they a favorite against the Chiefs at home? They're what, like 9-7 that year?
Oh.
With Hoyer?
Yeah.
So they might not have been a favorite that day.
Yeah.
Maybe that Colts game where Andrew Luck came to town and Deshaun didn't play well. We know they weren't ever a favorite on the road. So
That's why the whole never won a road playoff game. I'm like, well, which one of them should they have won? You know, like all of them.
I mean, upsets happen, so I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
We're clear, like, outclassing. They weren't losing to, like, just fine teams. They're losing to, like, Brady and I guess, the Ravens.
I wonder how. Yeah, I mean, and, of course, one of the years where they probably could have beat the Ravens, we had Jacoby Jones and T.J. Yates, stuff like that. Jacoby obviously dropping the punt, and T.J. Yates just simply playing quarterback, I believe. Was that 11 when Schaub – I know Schaub got hurt in 11. Was Jacoby Jones and that punt drop in 11?
Because then he went to the Ravens and won a Super Bowl.
Yes, and so Schaub wasn't playing in that game. So that would have been – that was probably their best opportunity to win one on the road until today.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, 21-17 seems like a a right score for this one, and the Texans win.
When you're playing games that low scoring, it's like all you need is two plays.
Yeah, one play doesn't go your way, and all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers is doing that little fist pump thing he does and that little skip he does.
Oh, and then Tomlin beating his chest, kiss the death.
Look, the Steelers are the worst team to lose to because you know they're average. You know they're average. You know you should have no business losing to them. But they'll act like they should win this game when we know they shouldn't. Now we just got to see it play out. We'll talk about it more, of course, tomorrow. Sean, since we're done for the day, what does that mean?
Shroud of Stroud!
This is a request.
A request, huh? Who made it?
Who?
Who made the request?
Me and John Gruden.
Okay, let's hope for a reason to play it tomorrow. Multiple times. We'll see. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.